This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And this is the moment, folks. We have arrived. The planet hangs in the balance as Paris gets down to the fine print. Secretary Kerry?
If 184-plus nations sign on to a durable agreement with review and accountability and transparency here in Paris, you watch the world begin to change. The world begin to change. The world begin to change. The world begin to change.
Secretary of State John Kerry had that high-minded promise for the COP21 delegates on climate change when he spoke this week, just like all of the other leaders who spoke in remarks at the conference. Now the nearly final draft of the COP21 agreement will attempt to make good on those promises in a real document for all the world to see, with provisions like a fund for small nations facing, in some cases, obliteration due to sea level rise. David Biello is an editor at Scientific American covering the COP21 conference in Paris. David, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you. Greetings from Paris.
Yes, indeed. So how is this agreement fundamentally different from the kinds of agreements you've covered in these conferences in the past?
Well, it's different in that this time the countries actually came prepared. You'd think after 23 years, they would always get their homework done on time, but they haven't in the past. This time they have. 186 countries brought their plans to combat climate change, and that has kind of enabled them to try to forge a more ambitious agreement than perhaps some people were thinking.
So suddenly Mr. Science over at Scientific American has to be kind of a diplomat covering the creation of a global treaty here. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And I actually was just interviewing one of the Chinese negotiators, and it kind of felt like, negotiating through the press in the person of me as we were arguing about China's coal use and whether they could peak emissions by 2030.
How much of the details in this agreement will be open to accountability? For instance, the 1.5 degrees or 2 degrees or 3 degree limits?
Well, on the one hand, we know it's not going to be a technically legally binding agreement because, frankly, the U.S. can't have a technically legally binding agreement, as that would trigger certain legal ramifications like ratification by the Senate, which wouldn't happen. That said, they are trying to kind of finesse that issue and make it so that on a kind of five-year review cycle, people would come back and raise ambition and potentially commit to a much more legally binding arrangement.
What is unresolved at this point? And between now and the end of this conference, how will Paris and the organizers of the conference really force things to an end game?
Well, everything is still on the table. I mean, the most important things. What will be the temperature limit we're aiming for? Is it 2 or less than 2? What will be the amount of money available to countries that have suffered loss and damage from climate change or those who are going to struggle to adapt? Most importantly, will everybody come to agreement on whether these agreements will be revisited in future? I mean, of course they will, but whether that will be put us on a path to a kind of more ambitious climate change pollution-free world or not.
Are there divisions that we see right now? I mean, for years, the developed world versus the developing world was the story, but I'm wondering if there are individual countries, bilateral divisions that are significant now as we're getting down to the details.
It's interesting. Some of those older groupings seem to be fracturing a little bit. A new coalition of sorts has emerged that kind of unifies some of developing countries and some of the biggest polluters, including the U.S. They're calling themselves the High Ambition Coalition, those who are willing to include this 1.5 degree temperature rise target somewhere in this agreement, among other things. That is a much more ambitious target than anybody has really ever talked about before, and it remains to be seen whether the High Ambition Coalition really exists or not. Certainly, China and India are arguing that they need room in the atmosphere to pollute a little bit so that they can drive economic development.
Is this high ambition a symbol, or is it actually a method for aiming really high, and if you miss, you still do better than if you'd been conservative?
I think you're right. I think it's a method because we're already at 1 degree Celsius of temperature rise. So 1.5 degrees is, in some sense, almost already kind of baked into climate change. But it signals that that people want to do more and will, I guess, continually strive to do so in future. But it remains to be seen whether that high ambition coalition achieves its aims, because certainly there are plenty of countries that that feel that 1.5 degrees is unrealistic, and that 2 degrees might even be too ambitious.
What do you think comes away from this conference? Is the takeaway that it feels like a Magna Carta moment here, or is it more like going to a convention where you're basically looking at a lot of people who agree and are wearing the same T-shirt?
It's kind of a bit of both. If we do get this kind of ambitious, transparent, enforceable deal, that would be a huge step forward on global efforts to combat what is a global problem, global warming. On the other hand, it is also a traveling circus of sorts. A lot of these negotiators have been at this for, 5, 10, 15 years. There's still a lot of room for things to fall apart in the next 48 hours. But I will say that the French, they've been doing diplomacy for a really long time. They've signed a lot of really important treaties over the years, and they've been doing a very impressive job of herding these cats.
Finally, one of the cats that's not being herded this time around are the young people who are delegates and observers. What's their feeling as this conference gets down to the real business here? Are they being listened to? Are they going to pick up this torch in 10 or 15 years?
I think that in part the high ambition coalition emerges from some of the pressure that that young people have been putting on their governments over the years, whether it's Keystone XL or calling attention to the plight of, low-lying island states. It's running more smoothly, so we'll see what happens.
David Biello is the editor at Scientific American, covering the COP21 Climate Change Conference from Paris. David, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Also, thanks to the metal band Wellborn Road, whose song Watch the World accompanied Secretary of State John Kerry in our little introduction to that segment.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.